issue, and I want to reiterate this, and this was probably talked about in another board meeting, but CSU is somewhat a finishing school for most students. Our students, they either are going to come to CSU with the intent to transfer out somewhere else, or they're going to transfer in so that they can complete their education here at CSU. And we tend to have the students that come here to complete their education at CSU.
Do we know why, where they go, and why they leave?
So that is what my office is now doing. We're actually looking at the students who have transferred out and surveying them as to reasons why they left CSU. We know that the majority of students, their intent was to always transfer out to go to another institution.
So in some instances, a parent might say, I'm going to send you to Southern, or I'm going to send you to Howard, but you got to show me that you can perform this first year. And so that's their intent. And the kid performs, so the parent has to live up to what they had promised her. Now, I'm not saying that's all, but that's a number. And we're doing research now to find out what percentage that is.
But that's really important because, you know, the if you look at raw numbers, you get the wrong picture.
Exactly.
If in fact students see CSU as a beginning to transfer out, it is not the CSU experience that makes them leave. They made that decision before they come. So you know, in the papers you read something, but people are uneducated. There has to be an understanding about why. What triggered that person to transfer? If my plan is a transfer, that's different than if I found something negative here that caused me to transfer. The other issue is, I listened earlier, if you add up the number of students that were dropped for payment, lack of payment, and those who were dropped academically, that was 480 students. That's a net negative of 480 right there. And those are issues that I don't think we can really address fully unless there is enough money to give to students to continue. Now, you know, I think it's a shame that in America, in this country, that students are not going to school because of lack of finances. But it is a reality we need to work hard to change. You know, in my generation, that did not happen. If you had the will and the skill, you went and you were supported. So I think the big picture to me is that 480 students is what, that's already almost 7% of what you're talking about. And you had a 9% decrease. So there are two major factors. And one is this, the issue of those that dropped, they couldn't pay, or they did not meet the standards. You know, we got this dual thing going on. We want to be known as the institution that takes the lower one-third. But the fact is, sometimes that lower one-third does not make it. Yeah. And you cannot undo in a couple of years, if you're an educator, what has happened over 8 or 9 years. You know, it's a hard road to hoe. So I think we need to educate ourselves about why this is happening, and then those factors we can really work on to change that. But we'll never be, I agree with you, Professor, we'll never be able to have that kind of graduation rate you talked about if half students come here with the intent of transferring. You know, you've lost half at the very beginning.
And so that's one of the challenges that we face with the performance-based funding model, that metric
exactly.
That looks at
exactly.
That freshman cohort. We're adding the transfer cohorts, but it's primarily currently based on that freshman cohort. And
right.
So we're trying to make some adjustments so that it's fair to our institution as a regional institution that we, the majority of our students, are transferred.
Do you have any numbers yet or statistics in terms of the surveys you get back from the transfer students as to why they transferred?
So that's what we're working on now. We just partnered with the National Student Clearinghouse. So before my time here at CSU, we didn't have the structure to gather information about where our students are going to be able to even connect with them. So we're just now beginning that process.
Okay. Other than those students who came here with the idea of transferring, why are the other students transferring, if you have, if you know?
So I know that the academic side, we're currently working to gather that information. The advisors are calling students to gather that. We're cuming that information into a database, and by the next board report, we'll be able to provide a better answer to that question. But we are currently assessing that information.
Mr. Chairman, on that note, the graduation rate, and how does that impact upon trying to retain these students, and how do you, I saw an article where we had a very low graduation rate compared to other universities.
Yeah, so in educating CSU community and our board, that was one of the factors that I wanted to bring to the board today. We are measured on our first time full-time freshman cohort. And because of our first time full-time freshman cohort, where we have about 45 to 55% of them transferring out, we can't go above that percentage that's minus the 45 to 55% of students that have already left us to go to another institution. We can't count, at this time in the IPEDS system, we can't count them even if they graduate from another institution. Mm-hmm. We can only count the ones that graduate from CSU.
And we can only count the ones that graduate from us.
Right.
That started with us.
That started with us here
so
at CSU.
We're a significant number of the students that are at CSU right now came from another university.
You can't count.
And they came from they came from a community college. They came from another university. They spent a semester there. Even if they just spend one semester there and then spend the rest of their entire academic career here and graduate, we cannot count them.
Right.
So therefore, at graduation, sir, when you see 1,000 students stand for graduation, only about what percentage are first-time, full-time?
It's less than 10% of them that are.
So
yeah, it's less than.
We can only count 8% of them. We can't count all those students who graduate. That's why it turns out to be 21%, which is what you saw in the newspaper. That is why HBCUs, PBIs, through NAFIL, Thurgood Marshall, and through United Negroes College Fund, we are meeting with Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, to change that model.
Yes.
The model has a disparate impact.
Right.
It has a disparate impact upon certain universities and certain students throughout this nation. Arne, in a meeting with him personally, Arne admitted. Arne said, Wayne, I know. And we're changing it. We know, because I said, Arne is a dinosaur. And he said, before you go on, Wayne, you and I have talked about this. I know it is. We're going to change it. But until he changes, the newspapers and those pundits who want to criticize continue to quote a dinosaur metric to measure us against, and it really has absolutely, a scale of 1 to 10, it has a value of a 3. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, you were saying?
That's okay. No.
Tell us what you really mean, Brother
President. The provost would like to add something.
I don't want to sit and let the enrollment or admissions team take the responsibility for retention. Retention is not enrollment management.
Right.
Retention goes back to, I mentioned that we have academic affairs, we have our deans, we have our chairs, we have our program directors. No one knows those students better than, and the faculty, better than the academic side once we get them here. So it's an institutional responsibility. But if I, as I look at the numbers, I want to tell you, we had metrics and we had goals, and some programs met their goals and some programs did not. In the past, we haven't focused on graduate recruitment. We've not had someone out, in the past 3 years, actually talking to other professionals about the graduate programs that we have. We now have our assistant provost, Dr. Paula Carney, who is strategically, actively working with marketing, working with the programs to go out and talk to people about these initiatives. When I want to know why enrollment has gone down in education, I talk to the dean, I talk to the associate deans, I talk to the faculty, and we're able to look at the trends in education and what's going on with the TAP test and what's happening with our students and why we have less students going into education but more people going into our master's programs. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, why the numbers aren't like they used to be, or why some of the programs, for example, not as popular as they used to be because education has changed in some of those areas and technology is a different option or a better option. So at the next board meeting, I'd like to start having some of our departments talk a little bit about their goals and what's going on in their programs, because when you talk about it in the aggregate, it's not giving you, we're not giving you the complete picture. If you see that numbers in history have gone down, sometimes the majors are going down, but people are still taking those general education courses, but they are not in those majors. And I'm not saying anything, faculty, chairs, program directors, we are all committed to retaining our students when they get here, or tracking the data, or being responsible for the data and reporting why they have left us. So they wouldn't know that. I just want to share that with you. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't know. They give us the data. We see the students every day. They're in our colleges. And so if you talk to Dean Mobley Smith, she can tell you where every one of her pharmacy students are. She can tell you why they are here and why her numbers have remained the same, and et cetera. She has that information. So I want to start giving you that information so you can have a better picture program by program.
Well, when you do, and I guess at the next board meeting, mm-hmm. When I hear that, we know that 55% of our freshmen come here with the idea of transfer and then transferring, I think that's a number we can accept. And just because someone comes here with the idea of transferring doesn't mean that they necessarily have to transfer. And if they're given a satisfactory enough educational experience here in that 1 year, plans change all the time. And we have to have a plan to keep more of those students, regardless of what their intention is when they come.
I agree, Mr. Chair, and we need to look at their holistic experience in the classroom, our customer service base, how our students, we need to look at everything that impacts a student's experience, and hopefully we can change their minds to
and
stay with us.
Develop a plan to keep those students who come here with the idea of leaving.
Yes.
For the record and for point of clarity, I do not want anyone to think that 55% of the students come here with the intent to graduate. That was a general statement that was made.
You mean transfer?
No, 55% with the intent to transfer. That group, a number of them do not continue because they don't have money. A number do not continue because they have to deal with life issues.
Yes.
A number of them do fall within the category of they have an intent to transfer, but I do not want anybody to think that it's 55% or 45%. I don't want to hear that as a quote. That is not the intent of Dr. Eggleston's statement.
It's right. Just to show that we're being measured by a metric that does not really fit the full picture of CSU.
And we're doing research now to disaggregate it. We have all of our advisors now have to fill out a metrics, and they report to the deans. They talk to every student that leaves. They talk to all of the students that they are advising to find out why they are here, why they are leaving. We hope to call that data and be able to answer you, Mr. Chair, as to really why are they leaving. I think it's unfair to make a general statement of 45 or 55%. And so the statement that Dr. Eggleston made, that it was not her intent. We have to disaggregate.
Can I ask where, I don't know if you're, who I need to ask this question of, where are we in the graduate school, and where are we with the off-site issue in terms of offering 75, 73 cohorts and things like that?
Paula and
We're actually, we've been approved by the Department of Education to, we had an issue, be able to offer offsites. So we actually have looked at a few locations. Our focus in the spring will be on some west side locations, since we are looking at opening a west side site. But I'm also working with the College of Education and the College of Arts and Sciences with starting off with some small cohorts, because we need to manage them correctly and ensure that we need to manage them correctly. But we're looking at next spring and next fall.
Great okay. news. Thank you.
When we open the West Side campus, we'll have a lot more FEMLIC students.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that.
Thank you. With respect to graduate programs, for the several years before I came, graduate program management was very decentralized. In the past year, we've done a number of things. Number one, we've put together a plan. The research shows that when a graduate student selects a program, he or she does so for two reasons. One, because of a connection made with a faculty member in that program, or two, because of connections with peers in that program. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to establish a tiered recruiting plan. Last year, we started by producing a brochure to brand CSU as a place for graduate school and to highlight our programs collectively in one place. We're now doing this tiered approach. On September 30th, we're going to Northern Illinois University and participating in a graduate fair. There is one other fair then that we will participate in the following year. So thinking of this cascade, in the fall, there are a few opportunities for promoting Chicago State as a graduate place for graduate programs. We're then following up with an open house or a graduate program night here on campus. This year it will be on November 4th. We piloted that last year in January on the coldest day of the year. The university was closed. We actually had about 50 students come. It really provided us the opportunity to sort of try this out. We'll be repeating that this year. And then programs are going to be asked then to hold info sessions so that faculty and existing graduate students can interact with students. We're looking at promoting virtual info sessions. I've done that previously at another university. The goal there is to really connect with students, to get their email addresses so we can build the relationships program to student level. So that's basically our general plan right now. So in addition, we're looking at making some policy changes. One is to amend our policy so that we can engage in dual degree programs, both within the university and with the university and other universities. We have a number of conversations that are going on now externally, both internationally and nationally, and there is momentum and faculty interest in doing some dual degree programs internally. So again, that provides some efficiency, and students want efficiency and fast tracks to get their degrees and to move into their professions.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Dr. Carney. And thank you for, you have any more?
I would just like to say in conclusion, I think what we've all heard here today is that enrollment and retention and graduation is not one unit or one division, but it's a university initiative. And that's something we're all looking forward to and working together. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice President. I'd like to call on Ms. Farrah Muscadin, please, wearing at least one of her many hats. Farrah, please.
Good morning, trustees. I just want to give you a quick update on student affairs. I am the interim dean. On the side on the screens, I wanted to highlight our new website. We redesigned it. We want it to be student-focused, and we wanted to be a place where students can go and get any type of information that they need throughout their academic career. So if I could ask somebody to scroll down a little bit, one thing that we did is cross-tabbed other resources with the university on our website. So for example, the Learning Assistance Center is a huge resource to students for tutoring. So we link that, their site, with our site. Career development, we are taking on the responsibility of linking the career paths with our students so that when they're in their senior year, or actually their junior year, they're thinking about preparing that resume. They're thinking about internships rather than at the later stage when they're graduating and walking across the stage. So we linked career development. We created frequently asked questions. And then we wanted to promote our Honors College so that students are aware of it, to become a part of it. And obviously our student highlights. We are updating this monthly, and because we want to show what our students are doing. One of the links is a student who presented her research in Mexico while she was interning. And then we created our year-long calendar. We want students to know that there are activities going on almost daily on campus, and we want them to come to our website and see what's going on. And so generally, we just want it to be a resource, and we want it to be friendly and highlight all the great things that are going on, and most importantly, highlight our students. When I was, I guess, promoted to the interim dean in March, we set a series of goals, and I just wanted to talk about the goals that we've been able to accomplish in 6 months, 4 to 6 months. One is the development of our strategic plan, which you have in your materials. That was huge, because our strategic plan is giving us the baseline of where we want to go with the Division of Student Affairs. And then at the end of the year, in May, we're going to pull out the strategic plan and assess all the goals that we've set, and set it as the foundation for when we reevaluate our strategic plan, which we plan to do on an annual basis. Obviously, the next accomplishment was launching our website, which was launched the first day of school, and then the Women's Resource Center. The Women's Resource Center will be housed in the SUB on the second floor, and we've created a university committee of faculty, students, and staff that will work together to formulate what this resource center is going to be and what it's going to do. Their first meeting is next Thursday, and they will meet weekly. Next, and the president mentioned this, and this was major for the university. When we unveiled the Fraternity Sorority Unity Garden, there were people here that had been at CSU some time ago that said, we tried to do this, we tried to do this, and we're so proud to see it. And the result of that is a significant interest in participating and becoming members of a Greek fraternity or sorority, which many of you are probably a part of and know the benefits of being a part of those type of organizations. It's just like our continual effort of building that community and building leadership opportunities for our students. So that was major. And the next thing that we did are upgrades to the Student Union Building. The Student Union Building is the student's building, and we wanted it to be student-friendly. So what you will see when you walk around the Student Union Building is the emphasis on the five E's. We want our students to know that the five E's are our mantra and what we're doing to help them achieve academic success while they're here. And it's obviously highlighted on our website as well. Next thing that we did is created the Student Affairs Council. This council has been so helpful. What this is a council of all the student affairs professionals, administrators in the university. All the colleges are represented, all the different departments are represented, and we meet every other week to talk about student issues. It has been an enormous collaboration of just ideas that have come up, and we've also started working with enrollment management to figure out how we can be more helpful in the greater goal of the university. And then we're also created the Student Advisory Council. The Student Advisory Council is a council of students. The application went out, and they will meet with me once a month to just talk about what we're doing in student affairs and what issues that they may be having, because we want the students to always know who they can go to on their issues and how they're being resolved and work collectively to solve them. And then I think that is pretty much it that we've done, but I think the main thing that I'd like to leave with you is just an issue of communication. We have to be more effective in how we communicate with our students. And one way that we do that is our website. One way that we do that is we've created the student affairs email, so that when there's something that needs to go out to students, I send it to them directly, and I tag it student affairs, so they know this interests you, you need to read it. And the last thing that we're doing, and we're launching this on Monday, we are launching the Got Mail campaign. And what that means is that we have students who don't check their CSU emails. And so we have got to get them to check their CSU emails. That's where their financial aid information is. That's where their academic information is sent to. All university business is sent to those emails, and they don't check it. So you will see on campus signs, lawn signs. It's literally a campaign everywhere that we are going to encourage our students to check their emails and be more aware of what's happening on campus. So that concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions or comments from the trustees?
I want to thank our Ms. Muscadin for all her hard work and her double duty, and for really her genuine
triple duty.
Her genuine support, yeah, of the students. It really shows. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Farah. This then concludes the Academic and Student Affairs Committee report.
Okay, we're now ready for Finance and Audit. Trustee Zoller.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Pickleton, who's already run up to the front, to give us that all stellar budget and finance report.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Trustee Zoller, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, distinguished trustees. For the record, my name is Larry Pinkleton, Interim Vice President of Administration and Finance. You have a report coming down the dais right now that is going to summarize the university's cash position. I'd like to talk about that very briefly and then transition into a couple of resolutions. Okay, the document that you have in front of you will seek to summarize our current position around the university's cash position. We have approximately $20.7 million in the bank. In terms of the component of that is considered restricted cash, we've got approximately $4.7 million that's considered restricted. The primary component of that restricted total is the Douglas Hall renovation, which has actually started, and there's been some expenditures that are starting to come through the pike around the Douglas Hall renovation. So as we look to project into the future, we can anticipate the restricted cash component that we've got on deposit going down as those expenses start to come into the institution and we eventually pay those bills. So our current unrestricted cash position is $16 million. Looking over the next 90 days at our short-term cash position, we are projecting $19.3 million in cash collections. In that same 90-day period, we are projecting $25.6 million, again, comprised of all of the various outflows of cash over the period, which will then in turn lead us with a consolidated balance of approximately $9.8 million. Looking at the university's cash position in the event that we were to be experiencing some challenges with our state reimbursement over this same 90-day period, we still end up with a positive balance of $3.8 million, which, as you can also see, compared to prior year, is very favorable to this period in time in the fiscal year 13 time period. In terms of the state appropriation and where we stand with the fiscal year 14, again, this is based on fiscal year 14 results. As we know, when we built the budget last year, we had a state appropriation of $42.2 million. Looking at the payments that have come in through September, we have received $42.1 million. The difference there is approximately $61,500, and that is strictly a function of one of the grants that the university administers in support of the Student Financial Academic Outreach Center. They did not utilize all the grant funding that they had available to them. So if you factor that in, the university has in fact expensed and we have received the entire fiscal year 14 state appropriation. Any questions concerning the university's cash position? Okay, moving on. We have two resolutions for the Board of Trustees consideration this morning. The first one is concerning the fiscal year 2015 budget. When we last talked about a budget, we were back in the June time period, and we brought forth a recommendation to the Board of Trustees for a preliminary plan. Since then, we have finalized our review of the estimates that will comprise the fiscal year 2015 final budget. And so what you have in front of you right now is the recommendation that the university would like to bring forth that will govern us for the next several months. As we look at some of the key components of the fiscal year 2015 plan, we know that the university's budget is comprised of general state funds, which is the state appropriation, the income fund, which is our tuition and fee projection, non-appropriated funds, which are basically all of the funds that are generated from the university's auxiliary operations, and then finally, other restricted funds. So as we look at those four categories, we're bringing forth a final budget resolution for 2015 of $123.2 million.
Mr. Pinkleton?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you moving into our action item?
And I'm sorry.
Will you be requesting?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
So Mr. Pinkleton is asking that we approve a budget of $123,206,400 as a final budget resolution. May I have a motion to adopt that?
So moved.
Second.
Are Trustee. There any questions?
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee
yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zowers?
Yes. Mr. Pinkleton, would you like to move forward?
Before he moves forward, I had a question I didn't ask.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Looking at these numbers, our total budget is $123 million, is that correct?
That's yes. correct.
And we're saying only $35 to $36 million of that is coming from the state?
The state appropriation for 2015 is 39.1. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at Exhibit A,
okay.
the number to the far left represents the general state fund.
That's a lot smaller percent of the total budget than I thought it was, which of course is good news.
Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Pinkleton, would you please take us to action item B, course and transcript fee resolution?
Thank you, Trustee. The second item for your consideration is dealing with new course and transcript fees. We have in front of you a resolution that is intended to bring forth four courses which are going to be added to the university's academic agenda starting in the spring of 2015. These four courses are basically being brought forth with a recommendation to have a small amount of funding that each student would be responsible for, which is intended to help the student matriculate through the class and make sure that the university's costs are somewhat covered as it relates to bringing that class to the academy. And so we've got four classes that we would like to bring forth for your recommendation. And you can see the classes listed here in the resolution. This is a process that, or practice rather, that is consistent across the academy. And so this should not be considered to be an example or any type of exception from the norm. The second component of the resolution in front of you deals with transcript fees. The university has made an attempt and is planning to roll out, beginning spring of 2015, an automated platform that will allow the access of transcripts by our student population in a much more efficient fashion. The intent behind there is to bring more security to the process of requesting transcript fees, in addition to making sure that the students can access this information in a timely fashion, along with employers that would eventually be tapping into their services.
And just because the audience does not have this in front of them, I'm just going to read this out loud. That's Ecology Concepts of Computer Technology, Database Software and Applications, Information Security. Those are the four classes. Are there any questions from the board members? If not, may I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Williams?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zala?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Pickle.
Thank you. This concludes my report. If there's no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Okay, we're ready for a facilities update. Trustee Smith?
Are there any questions or comments from the other trustees? We don't have any update at this time. Are you? Oh, I think they are coming. I didn't see them in the back.
Yeah, she snuck up on you.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning.
I would like to, before I introduce our new director of facilities, just for the record, acknowledge the efforts of Alan O'Neill, our previous interim director of facilities. And now we have a new director of facilities, Tracy Obershan. He comes to us from a varied background, including Chicago Public Schools and CETA. He has been with us since June of this year, so it's my pleasure to introduce to the board Mr. Tracy Obershan.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm definitely glad to be here. When I first initially started, I immediately took action to become more aggressive with repairs and the cleaning process on campus. Walking in the door, I noticed that there were a lot of, you know, such as sidewalks, concrete repairs that needed to be done. So in my summary, I've explained where we have tried to take a more aggressive approach and to get caught up with a lot of the repairs that are needed to be done. In addition, the facility administration, environmental health and safety, we have completed a number of CPR certifications with the police department, athletic coaches, also the RAs and CAs for the dorm housing, student housing. We have completed our fire alarm sprinkler system testing for the year and fire extinguisher testing. We currently have four primary projects that are underway. One is actually still in progress, which is, I'm sure everybody is aware of, the electrical upgrade system, and then also the Robinson University Center, the Child Care Center, and then several projects with Douglas Hall. Moving into the facility maintenance, we are trying to establish a better routine maintenance program. My goal is to actually incorporate a SIM system, which is a computer maintenance management program, which will better automate our process in scheduling. It will also help us to account for all of our equipment and make sure that we're doing preventive maintenance prior to a breakdown. We are also in the carpentry and painting. We have, as I said, been working on the sidewalks. My goal is, in addition to the sidewalks we've done already, is to complete the entrance going into William Science. I'm sure you all have seen where there's gravel going into the building. So my goal is to try to get that done before the cold season starts. Let's see. And in engineering, we have worked on and completed our isolation valves in several buildings. We've also completed our installation of heat exchangers in several buildings, and also we have done some VFD repairs. One is actually here in the library, the open space. We did not have AC at a particular time, and so we have found the root cause of that problem and fixed it, which is the VFD repair. And so that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Mr. Overton. Any questions from the other trustees?
Is the electrical up? I'm sorry.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, my question was, camera equipment, is that something under your purview in conjunction to security?
That would be somewhat security and IT.
Not
necessarily facilities directly.
That would report to the police department under security.
And sir, we have had, just within the last week, under Chief Watson's leadership, we've had in-depth discussion with regards to expanding our camera security system at the campus. And correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, we approved two areas of the campus for immediate camera security to be increased. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I didn't say we're going to identify where.
You don't scare me.
But yes, we are increasing it, and then we have planned for next year to do even more at specified areas of camera security. Is that correct?
That is also correct.
Okay. And for security reasons, I'm not identifying where the camera will be, sir. I can do that one-on-one.
Okay.
All right.
I just was going to, the electrical upgrade, is that the switching equipment that?
Yes, the switch gear.
And do you know when that is kind of come online, finished? Because this sounds like I'm being a critic. I'm not. It was kind of the first thing I got hit with when I came on campus as a trustee, so I was just curious where we were with it.
Our completion should be the summer of 2015, but we are looking to possibly work on two buildings during the winter break, which is in December. We are going over the details to make sure that all the correct systems are up and running while the repairs are being done.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate it.
And the leak in Douglas Hall, janitor's closet, when you're walking from WCSU radio to the Spanish lab on the left. Please. Because there have been a couple of fatalities.
You better mark that down.
Okay.
Mr. Obersham, are you prepared for the, you mentioned the winter coming up. How do you feel as far as preparation for winter conditions?
Just in general with
in general
systems?
Right.
I actually feel okay. We do have a backup plan if any particular unit goes down or any system goes down due to not being able to install the electrical switch.
Electrical.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Ms. Horton, Mr. Ocean.
Thank you.
Now we'll move to legislative and human resources update. Trustee Leak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Farah.
Hello, trustees. Farah Muscadin, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. I would like to yield my time for my report to the introduction of our legislative team, both state and federal. I would like to start with the introduction of our new state lobbying team. We do have three parties. One of them, Taylor Anderson, couldn't be here today, but we are represented by James DeLeo and Liz Brown, and so they can come and introduce themselves and give a few words.
Not accustomed to public speaking, so please bear with me. Trustees, Chairman Watson, and Trustee Curtin mentioned about old retired guys. I'm one of those old retired guys too, Trustee. I say there's so many old friends here. This is our third year. Liz Brown and Taylor and I are representing the university in Springfield. I know back when I was an elected official that Chicago State and the awareness rose drastically because there was a guardian angel by the name of Emil Jones II. And Emil Jones brought new light and money and enlightenment and visibility to Chicago State. And that's how I became a friend of Chicago State University through his leadership. Well, he went on to retirement, like so many of us do, and we came to interview a few years ago. I was truly impressed. Dr. Watson and I did a tour of the campus, and I thought part of my lobbying job was not only in my consulting career was not to taking the direction from Farah what the university needed in forms of grant money or issues that were pending in Springfield, that some things were discussed here about changing rules and academic. I found out how important it is and I listened when Dr. Watson told us that the day of the four-year college is long gone. And I asked Dr. Watson why, and why does it cost so much to run a university? Because of people that don't have the financial ability, which I heard numerous times here today. People that are in not only in low income, but they're not in the top 5% of their class, and they're not getting to Harvard, or they're not getting into U of I, and they're getting denied. So there's so important for them to get an education, and that's what I've seen and learned from being around this university the last 3 years. I think it's hard. Judge, you and I served together back many, many, many years ago. Things have changed in Springfield. When we were there, one of the most things that I loved doing was bringing the cardboard check to the community and doing things. Those days are over because we spent the last 6-7 years saying no. I am pleased to hear from the audit and financial report today that the payments are pretty current here at Chicago State. I was holding my breath when they were giving the report, and then I was looking at Liz, start taking some notes. This is something we're going to have to go find this money. So if we can continue that path, get our message loud and clear. Just a few weeks ago, Farah, Liz, and I took the president of the Senate out for a private dinner. It was the day of the Governor's Day at the State Fair. The president scheduled our dinner the same night, and he forgot he was in Springfield. He flew home that night to meet with us in Chicago. And so we keep that line of communication open on a one-on-one. So we got to spend a couple hours with him, telling him some of the things that we'd be coming down in the spring to look at. We were down this past fall. Dr. Watson visited with the legislative leaders. And I think that's very important that we keep the message going that we're here, and we're alive, and we're growing. Trustee, one of the things I wanted to share with you this morning, you talked about Fenwick and being the former state rep from Oak Park back in my state representative days as President Cullerton call it, our learning days, and then we moved on to the Senate. I left our neighborhood at 7:30 this morning, arrived here a little after 9 o'clock, an hour and 50 minutes. I went to Colorado University Monday, it took me an hour and 58 minutes from O'Hare. So one of the things that I learned today, and I was listening to the numbers, is that geographically, when we talk about schools, where we're recruiting from, and what CPS and some other things, I think some of the things that we have to look at, what's our demographics, where's our student body coming from, and is it geographically desirable for our students, especially students that don't have transportation. And I was thinking about the different geographical areas to bring our kids here. Yes, there's a good message here. There's a very good message here. Some of the finest professors in this whole area are right here at this university. Yes, we can get those messages out, but it's still how do we find them, get them here? So I think that's something we could address. But I'm going to turn over to my hardworking associate, the person that's on the ground in Springfield every day, and she can tell you some of the things that, since we've been representing the university the last 3 years, some of the things that we're under Dr. Watson and Farah's direction, we can tell you what we've got accomplished. Thank you so much for letting me be here this morning.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Liz Brown. As you know, this is Jim DeLeo, and Jim is the former state representative and state senator for lots of years and majority leader. And so I wouldn't say this, but I don't want to build him up too much, but it's really one of the great pleasures of my career to get to work with him because he gets it. And what he gets is that legislative affairs is based on people and the relationships that Farah has, that Dr. Watson has, and that you guys in this university have down in Springfield make a world of difference. And when Dr. Watson talked about kids from Southern Illinois, poor white kids from a farm, I'm one of those poor white kids from a farm, and I'm from Southern Illinois, and I live in Springfield now, and I think that's important for Chicago State to have someone that lives in Springfield, because I'm there all the time. And a lot of times during the legislative session, there's a lot of late night committees, slipped in amendments, and last minute deals. And it's good to have a person that literally offices across the street. So thank you so much for allowing me to represent you. I want to just tell you quickly where I come from. I did come from the farm, but I did a few things in between there. I worked on Speaker Madigan's staff for 9 years, and during my time there, worked on the floor as one of his legislative directors, and then have been lobbying for the past 6 years. So I'm starting my 15th session in Springfield. So don't let this very young face, and that's where you guys nod, fool you. I've been around a little bit. And right, yes, thank you. And really, really enjoy getting to work with Farrah. And Farrah does a great job, and I was so pumped. She was so enthusiastic about her student affairs role. So she needs, I don't want her to get too enthusiastic about that, because we love her in government and legislative affairs. So just really on fire. A couple things that we've done is, Dr. Watson, one of the first things he said to us when we met with him 3 years ago in his office is about the switchgear. And we were able to, and Jimmy and Dr. Watson in particular, go to the governor. And the governor came here, and really, guys, that was a big pull. I mean, the Capitol bill was not that big. And the other universities, I don't know, is this for the record, there were some eyes getting real big when they saw we got the $6.5 million. So we were able to do that. We had our own line item, a dedicated line item, which in these days is a really big deal. Also, a couple of the things I wanted to mention is that we've been able to make sure you've got your pharmacy grant money restored. And as legislative items have popped up, we've been there. As a new amendment that's good or bad, we've been there. And those are the nerdy things, the day-to-day things, but they get me real excited. So there's amendments that come up every day, and Farrah and I have conversations if they're good or bad for CSU, and we're on the ground floor. We don't wait till they're up in committee or up for a vote. We're able to kill bad things, because mostly you're killing bad things. There's a lot of bad ideas. We're killing bad things before they happen. We're able, to put forth legislation. And one was, I know, the year before last, we passed your liquor license to allow you to sell alcohol, which puts you on par with other schools in this state. And so that's what we're here for. We're a resource for all of you. We want you to know we're excited about what we get to do. It's wonderful to see the things that Dr. Watson and you trustees have been able to do since taking over. It's really amazing. And I can tell you that the sentiment is changing in Springfield, but the work is not done. So keep up the good work. Keep up those legislative relationships, because they're everything. And that's all that I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you leave, you forgot one very important thing that you accomplished. That's like playing a game, a football game, and not acknowledging the fact that you made a major touchdown at the end. Something called $3 million. My God.
I forgot that.
Let me thank you on behalf of my students. The 1.6.
Farrah says 4.6. Oh. So 4.6.
1.6 and 3.
The 1.6.
Right.
The pockets of money.
I mean, the 1.6, we had gone to a series of meetings. We thought we had lost it. Thank you. And then that $3 million that came on top as a quote unquote one time, which we're trying to make it a repeat. Thank you on behalf of the students. I'm going to just talk general numbers. At least 1,000 plus students got scholarships as a result of you guys. And guess what? The average grade point average of those students was 3.2 or higher. Those are kids who would not have been able to go to school last year if you had not put forth that effort, okay? Really, on behalf of those students, thank you. And once again, we're trying to go for a repeat, remember?
Well, before you leave, I want to say this. As most of the people on this board know, I sit on the board as the independent. Most people see me as the Republican, but I'm on the board as the independent.
We love you.
Thank you. I mention it because Senator DeLeo has been a long respected Democrat leader, but he's always reached across the aisle to work with Republicans, independents, and he worked with me and supported me always, no matter what my party affiliation was. And his reach has been great across the state, whether he worked with City Hall, in the halls in Springfield, Capitol Hill, the Daly Center, to the Governor's Mansion, the Secretary of State's office, to the Thompson Center. So I personally want to thank him, and I hold him in very high esteem. And I can think of no senator other than our own Senator Emil Jones that I respect or admire or love more than Senator James DeLeo. And he has a very strong and distinguished legislative career, and he has my vote of confidence and my love.
Thank you.
And I thank you
thank
for
you.
All that you do.
Thank you very much.
And therefore, you also have my yes. vote of confidence. So thank you both.
Senator DeLeo, I thank you
thank
as
you.
Well, because I'm one of those students in that 4.6.
Oh, great.
The lack thereof, I would not be able to graduate.
Trustee Leak, I thought this was a funeral. I thought this was my last rites, and they were saying goodbye.
And you looked up and saw him.
And I looked up and I saw a funeral director. I was like, I got scared for a minute. On the Eisenhower this morning,
the last
and this bumper-to-bumper traffic, the cleanest, most waxed vehicle was one of your vehicles. It was shining and clean and. And so, as always, it was showed a lot of class and dignity, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And I personally always wanted to know what a real lobbyist looks like. And now I know.
Thank you, sir.
And we thank you, and I think I speak for my fellow trustee.
Commissioner.
Are there any other questions?
Just so we want the senator to also know that we have a spiritual side covered in case something would happen to you here.
The entire service. We're full service board.
And I think you can do a Catholic one.
I know the Catholic one.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to take a moment to introduce our federal lobbying team, which is led by Richard Boykin. We have his colleagues here, Nicole Janes and Craig Burkhart.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. President, faculty, staff, students, it truly is a privilege and an honor to be here before you on this great Lord's Day. I should also mention friends of Chicago State University who are here as well. I'm Richard Boykin. I have the privilege and the honor of leading up this team. Not all of us are here, but you'll hear from each member of the team, Craig Burkhart to my right and Nicole Janes. We want to talk about the successes that we've had in Washington. We've been representing the university since 2011. And we also want to talk about the key legislative items that impact the university at the federal level. And then we want to talk about looking forward. We've had a number of successes on behalf of the university, working with President Watson and the faculty and staff, and working with FARA. One of the things that we're most proud of is that we've had some impact. I've heard this question about enrollment all day since we've been here. but we've had some impact on this whole Parent PLUS loan issue. This Parent PLUS loan issue that caused thousands of students throughout the country to have to leave school because they couldn't get the loans. We've worked with Secretary Duncan. We've been in meetings with him. We've had President Watson in meetings with him and others to make some amendments, some modifications to the whole Parent PLUS loan issue. Just recently, we got Congressman Danny Davis, along with 15 other members of Congress, to send a letter to us, Secretary Duncan, basically indicating that the changes that he had made don't go far enough, that we still need to make some additional modifications. So we're going to continue to work that issue along with the university and make sure that we get as many students who qualify for those loans to be able to go to school. One of the other things that we're proud of to have worked on and worked with President Watson and others is the whole improvements or new metro station at 95th. Obviously, there's some safety concerns there that we're most concerned about. And so we've been in Washington working with the new Transportation Secretary, Secretary Fox, and he basically took over after Secretary LaHood. We had met with him, met with the folks at Metro, to make sure that we could get some financing and funding to improve that Metro stop. Those are ongoing talks, and we hope to get some movement on that in the very near future. Should also mention that one of the successes, and we had 2 days that we spent in Washington with several deans of several different colleges from here. Dean Canis was one of them. But we spent 2 days in Washington meeting with a number of federal agencies talking about grant issues. Those agencies that we set up meetings with were the Department of Education, National Institute of Health, Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, and of course we met with a number of our representatives, and we met with Senator Mark Kirk's office. And so from those meetings, we hope to increase the number of grants that are flowing to Chicago State from Washington. We think that there are opportunities to do that, and we're looking forward to the dean and several students and others coming to Washington sometime in November to talk about additional grant opportunities. We also were pleased to bring the Congressional Black Caucus to the campus of Chicago State. Violence, they actually were looking for a place to hold their town hall meeting, if you will, on the issue of violence. We suggested Chicago State. We worked with Congressman Rush. We worked with President Watson. And Chicago State couldn't have been a better forum, a better host for that event. In fact, one of the initiatives that flowed from that is that we're going to try to get funding for a national violence urban prevention center to be housed here at Chicago State. One of the other things that we're proud of is that we were able to get letters of support and phone calls made as well relative to the India Obama Singh grant, education grant, which Chicago State received in August. There are a number of other things that I would mention, but due to time, I want to allow my colleagues an opportunity to weigh in. And I will just simply say this, it's been a privilege and an honor to carry the flag for Chicago State in Washington on your behalf. I now yield to my distinguished colleague, my partner out of Washington, Craig Burkhart, who's been doing this lobbying business for 30 years.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you. It's a delight and a privilege to be working with Chicago State. I'm Craig Burkhart. You don't see me as frequently as you see Richard because I live full-time in Washington, D.C. So just like Liz, I figured out it's really good to run into people at the grocery store sometimes when you're lobbying stuff and or whatever the whatever passes is the grocery store informal meeting place. So, but I will say that my family originates from the area, South Shore, Beverly, and so forth. So this is really my neighborhood as well as yours. I'm a Republican part of the team. We're very diverse in every respect. We've got Republicans, Democrats. Liz Lopez, who is not here today, is part of our full-time team. She's a Latina. And when I said full-time, basically how we staff things out is we have a full-time, everyday presence on Capitol Hill every day. So again, not to repeat everything that Liz kind of took up with you on how the university is represented in Springfield, we have the same approach. We're there every day. We call our, kind of refer to ourselves as shoe leather lobbyists, where everybody knows us, we know everybody, and we want to know their assistants and their assistants' names and their dates of their children's birthdays, that level of depth that's involved. And Richard, while Richard is resident here, is present in Washington on an every week basis. And I might say we're proud that he's apparently going to be taking office as Cook County Commissioner. So that's going to be one day a month you're going to be tied up with meetings there. But we don't anticipate that that's going to change our operation in any respect, because service on that board is like service on this board. It's something that's controllable and actually will probably be a plus for our representation. It's far beyond the scope of this meeting to give you a legislative update on all the different initiatives, of which we have about 60 different matters, specific defined matters that we're tracking and lobbying for you. But they do fall into a few critical buckets that I think you need to be aware of as to what we're doing. So first of all, next year, all of the higher education-oriented bills will be basically reauthorized, they call it. And if you're familiar with Springfield parlance, we don't do this in Springfield, but in Washington, on an every 5 or 6 year basis, they take a group of bills and they repass them and make changes to them all at one time, and then they're sort of sealed in place for a 5 or 6 year period of time. Next year is the year that all of the higher education oriented bills are going to be reauthorized, if you will. So there will be a very a need to be active with you and have you be involved in contacting the members of Congress, particularly here in the Illinois delegation you're familiar with. But as for what's going on last year and this year, for instance, I'll kind of group them into three buckets of activities. One would be those things which drive cash that comes to the university. Just like Commonwealth Edison depends on statutes that can allow it to raise its rates so it can have a business model that allows it to run, the university's in the same boat. And the business model financial flows that have to come to this university are what we typically call Title III monies. That's a formulaic money that flows to historically black colleges and universities, or predominantly black institutions. Also, the flow of money that goes to students, the very controversial PLUS loans that we've been spending a lot of time working on, as well as the things like the Pell Grants and so forth. So that is our number one job. Our number one job is to make sure that our delegation is strongly in favor of making sure that those formulaic flows of cash that come to the university, which make up a tremendous amount of the budget that which ends up being spendable here, are maintained. And now, Rich did mention the PLUS loan situation. For those of you who are not familiar with student funding, this is the loan that parents take after the students got in the variety of financial services. The parents are able to take out a loan. For reasons beyond the scope of our conversation today, Department of Education on its own changed the credit worthiness requirements of parents. And it's had a rippling devastating effect on historically black colleges and universities and predominantly black institutions. So that's been a major activity that the president and several of you have been involved with. And so again, we had our very first result there, and that is in August, Arne Duncan and the people at the Department of Education made changes. Didn't go far enough, didn't get them done in time to be in place for this school year, but relief is on the way. So that's really our number one bucket right now, is that set of issues that we're working on. A second bucket is sequestration reversal. And you'll probably recall that due to budgetary shortfalls and so forth, that there was something called a sequestration that put an across-the-board budget cut set of circumstances in. That has also had very significant negative effects here at Chicago State and also across the historically black universities and colleges. So things like Title III discretionary or Title III mandatory funds, and also a whole list of other funds that flow to Chicago State, capital funds, funds to promote our STEM education and our STEM scholarships. These things flow from science agencies like the National Science Foundation, the Department of Defense, which we mentioned. That grant today that was mentioned from the Department of Defense, that would have been about 15% bigger if the sequestration had not taken place. So reversing that is a whole series of activities that go on. Then we have a number of individual bills that we're pursuing, such as increasing the Pell Grants. We've got language that will increase that grant up to $5,830 per school year for students. And the HBCU Innovation Fund. And then also another thing that impacts the university is reversing what's called a cohort default rate. And what cohort default rate means, basically, if students graduate and they default on their student loans within 3 years or so, if it's not managed properly, you get reduction in the amount of student loan availability to students at this campus prospectively. We believe that is a rational thing to do, but it's rational to do a lot less of that at universities such as Chicago State, where we have and service affirmatively a group of students that are more likely to have difficulties when they graduate. And so changing that and reducing the sanctions that are applicable to us, those are very important things. So I think I'll let it set at that. That's kind of the landscape that you have us working on an everyday basis. We are just as pleased as punch to be working those issues and look forward to being able to do a lot more with those issues as the reauthorization of higher education statutes takes place next year. And now I will pass it on to Nicole Janes, who will be talking about several of the things we're doing prospectively.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having us here today. In respect of your time, I just wanted to set forth for you a few of our goals as we look forward to 2014-2015. It's always our role here is to make sure that CSU is well positioned with members of Congress. So first and foremost, we will continue to enhance our relationships with members, not just the Illinois delegation, but key members like Representative Bobby Scott from Virginia, who will be the new ranking member on the House Education Committee. We will work to make sure that Dr. Watson and Farah and all of your people are well informed and well connected with him so that he knows CSU's priorities. We also look forward to organizing another lobby day in DC where we'll bring CSU staff and faculty and the deans with us to meet with key members of the agencies and, of course, our members of Congress and make sure that, again, they're aware of CSU. And the other thing we look to do is to help CSU continue their grant success. You guys have had some great successes with your grants, and we want to partner with you guys to help you continue to do that, and we help do that by identifying grants that are available and sending them out to Dean Canis every week or every other week as best as we can. And of course, the final thing we'll look to do is to find authorization opportunities within legislative bills that will well-positioned Chicago State in the future. We look forward to working with you guys and continuing our relationship.
Any other questions?
I would just like to thank them for what they've done. In Washington, D.C., it's network, engagement, who you know, and you guys have been able to take us to Washington, D.C., introduce us to congressmen and senators on both sides of the aisle. We greatly appreciate it. The effort with the Pell Grants, Summer Pell, Parent Plus Loan, that has had a devastating effect upon HBCUs and PBIs. So I just want to thank you on behalf of HBCUs, PBIs, and HSIs okay?
I don't think there's a day that goes by that we don't have three conversations, elevator conversations with people on those very issues, because it really is a devastating problem.
The tens of thousands of young men and young ladies who are not able to continue their education because of the federal policies that have taken place in the last, what, 3 years it is? Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable. You know, it has just had a an effect that is almost incalculable. So thank you for your effort, and keep pushing that. And Nathio and Thurgood Marshall and UNCF will work with you, I guarantee you.
I'd like to add my thanks. Clearly, you've done an outstanding job for us, and as I've listened today to reports of where we're getting our money, I can only, with a heartfelt thanks, give you our thanks and wish you much success in the future, because, yes, everything seems to be very devastating as we look for these Pell Grants. And I, for one, am hoping that we will be able to increase the monies in that first bucket, as you would say. So good luck as you go forward, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fair. Anything else?
No, that concludes the
talk. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We'll now hear for have our civil service update from Ms. Bobby Stewart.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Trustees, Dr. Watson, and CSU administrator, faculty, and staff. Our report is going to be short. We've done a lot of work in the last quarter, and you'll see it through the newsletter. I bring you greetings from the civil service employees here at CSU. My name is Bobby Stewart, and I am the president of the Civil Service Employee Council, as well as the director of cashiering operations in the finance department. As you are aware, our job is to represent the civil service employees to the university administration and to advise the administration in the formation and implementation of policies and procedures relating to the civil service employees. The smallest things mean big things happen at CSU. This quarter, we have assisted with the assistance of Dr. Watson and his administrator. We've had a town hall meeting to meet the concerns of the civil service employees. We had four concerns. One was the annual raise. Two was web time, sick and vacation time. Three was the outdated bathrooms. And four was how to advance ourselves through the civil service systems with seniority and transfers. All of these concerns were addressed, and with the assistance of Dr. Watson, Provost, Human Resources, Legal Affairs, Finance, and the Civil Service Council, we will work together to provide confidential ways and workshops to enhance the knowledge of our civil service employees. Civil service employees is not on, this is not on my paper. Civil service employees are the people that, the little people that do big work. When you come through the gate of Chicago State, it's a civil service employee. When you go to the washroom to pull a paper towel, that's a civil service employee. I am a civil service employee, and I'm proud of it. We do the work. We are here for our students, our staff, and our administrators.
Did the civil you say service. Something about bathrooms?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so rewind.
Okay.
What about them?
Some of the civil service was brought to our attention that the bathrooms were outdated in some of the buildings. We need more accessibility for wheelchairs, just to update them. So the facility new guy said that he was working on it. Tracy is his name. The civil service employees did an exceptional job doing enrollment-related services, providing customer service to our students, staff, administrator, and CSU family. They are a vital part of our past, present, and our future. So you have the newsletter. I want to introduce to you our EAC representative. She is a very powerful young lady, and she represents Chicago State very well.
Yes.
And we're getting ready to do an election, and so with Renee Mitchell, Dr. Mitchell has did a, we're doing voting online, and it's just an exciting time for civil service. So with that, Latonya.
Good afternoon. My name is Latonya Milner, and I am the EAC representative for this university. I've been the EAC representative for the last 4 years. The job of the EAC representative is to advise the merit board. We advise on job descriptions. We vote on, well, first let me go back and say that there is a representative from every, all the Illinois State Universities on our council. We meet quarterly and we vote on different issues at our prospective universities.
What does EAC stand for?